Here at the All In Podcast, we love talking about sports. That's pretty much our main topic. And sure. In sports, you need to be reliable. Well, what's more reliable than Tavon's Lawn Care, LLC? It's a Black-owned family business in York, PA. Tavon's Lawn Care, or TLC for short, since they provide each job with tender love and care, has been in business for over 10 years. Founded by owner Tavon Parker, TLC aims to provide employment for underprivileged youth while providing great service at a reasonable rate. You can visit Tavon's Lawn Care LLC.com or Tavon's Lawn Care on Facebook and Instagram to view their portfolio and request your cost-free quote now. So if you need any kind of lawn care or landscaping job, visit Tavon's Lawn Care for your landscaping needs. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Eli Cooper. I'm joined by, and as always, my other co-host, Mike Badzik. How's it going, man?
Going great. Good to see you, brother.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And today we are joined by a special guest making his second appearance on the pod, my guy Richard Muldrow. So if you're tuning in on audio, you'll hear him throughout the pod today, and on video you can see him there at the bottom of your screen. How's it going, man?
Everything's going good. Just getting ready for the school year.
Yeah. So obviously, for anyone who caught the last episode you were on, knows that you're a teacher. So you know, that's a pretty big debate topic going on right now: is should schools be in session or in person, remote, however. So what is your school doing currently? Are you guys remote in the classroom? How's that working out for you guys?
So right now, we're going to be going fully remote, not just our school, but the whole entire district. So we're going to be going fully remote, until November. That's when they're going to reevaluate. So the whole first marking period will be fully remote. They're giving us teachers the options to come in and work in our classrooms, or we can fully work from home, or we can do like a hybrid model. So it should be pretty interesting, but right now we're fully remote.
So what grade do you teach again?
11th and 12th grade.
11th and 12th, okay. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the things that I hear about this, or one of the biggest thing that people point out, is like, you miss that social interaction. And like, that's kind of crucial for, I don't know so much for 11th and 12th graders. I feel like you should pretty much be socially where you're at. But a lot of the younger kids will struggle because they kind of need that. Yep. So what's your thoughts, you know, on the positives and the negatives of teaching and schooling remotely?
I'm going to start with the positives first. We're in a technology age where, you know, technology pretty much makes the world go. So, you know, the positives is, you know, especially like, you know, for both teachers and students, you learn different like platforms. Like, you know, I'm really big now on Google. Like, I wish we had Google when we were coming up, you know, because we didn't have it. Mike, you probably didn't have it. Eli, you didn't have it.
We had not like now.
Yeah.
Remember
Jeeves?
Yeah.
But like, you know, you have like a Google Cloud and things like that where you can just, you know, do your, like we have Google Classroom, you just, you know, make an assignment, they do it there. You can turn it in and you got all types of tools to grade it. It makes your job easier. So
yeah,
I think like the positives is, you know, the technology, you know, giving kids an alternate platform from the normal everyday setting, you know, where I guess you get a chance to play, I won't say play around, but try out a new method of, you know, learning, you know, maybe, you know, this could be the new model, you know, so I think that's some of the positives, but obviously the negatives is just that social interaction. Some students benefit being in school, you know, because maybe their home life is not as, you know, prosperous and not as, you know, inviting. Whereas maybe you can go to school and just, you know, have a good, you know, some kids just go there to have a good time and see their friends. So I think just the negative is just a, you know, it can be a mental thing, you know, just sit behind a computer, 8 hours out the day and spit out instruction. You know, that can take a lot on somebody, even on teachers. I know me, man, I'm ready to go back to my classroom, you know, 3 or 4 months sitting here. And I also taught summer school too, so I didn't have a chance to go in my classroom. So it's just like you start to get like bored, and it starts to hit you in the mind like, yeah, I can't do this. I need to get out the house. So I think it's a psychological effect too, you know, and just like I said, just not being around people, I think, like, the social effect. So, you know, that's some of the negative.
Now, are they going to be, when you're doing this remote, like, is it still a full day? Like, are these kids going to be in school for 8 hours?
So, I know what our school is doing. They're doing a different type of schedule. So, it's like an A and B schedule. So, it will be a full day, except, you know, like, maybe one day, like, the one A day, you'll have, what is it, 5 periods. And, you know, so, like, I guess how it would go is, for example, one day you would get your English science elective classes. Next day you get your math, you know, social studies elective classes. So it's split up where you're not getting all your subjects in one day, gotcha. All your classes in one day, even though, but it is still a full 8 hours, or we're 7.5 in New Jersey, in Newark.
Right, sure, sure.
Our school. So, it's like that. It'll be split up A and B day. So, but yeah, it's still a normal day.
So my brother's school, he's still in high school. They're doing like they're going to class. They're going to go to the school. So, I mean, that's a whole another debate if that's a good idea. But they're going to do like if he goes Monday, then Tuesday he doesn't go, and then Wednesday he goes, and they're only sending half the kids. So half the kids will go Monday, half the kids will go Tuesday, half the kids will go Wednesday, and then so on. Okay. But they're still going to have the same length of school year, which, you know, also you could argue that, well, why wouldn't you send the same kids on Monday, Tuesday, then clean it out, then do third, you know what I mean? But, you know, dumb decisions that school board members make. But, you know, I think one of the things that we're kind of seeing, and this is something that we're seeing from, like, working from home, is, like, we can really do this from home. Like, it's not as drastic as what we would think. Like, when we first looked at this maybe 6 months ago, we're like, how are we going to get everything done? How do you feel like your ability to actually educate, like, you're like, you feel like your kids are gonna be shortchanged at all, or do you feel like you guys can actually do this to a high level even remotely?
I'm gonna answer this. I won't say they're gonna be shortchanged, because education is going to be education. We're going to teach to our best ability. We're going to make sure we have the resources. You know, we're going to make sure that we give, you know, the right direct instruction, and that we do it to the best of our ability. I think where some of the road bumps, especially, I don't know how it is in other schools, but I know just in urban ed, you know, some of the road bumps that we might, you know, run into is, you know, maybe kids not having internet service or the high speed internet service. Even though I know our district has done a lot this summer trying to get, you know, good internet plans for our students who might not have those plans. Same with the Chromebooks. Because something you run into last year, like, you have some students that come from multiple spouse homes. So, you know, it's a lot of, you know, they got to share their laptop with their brother or sister. So they were missing out on class. So that's always some of the roadblocks you might run into. But I think, you know, how we're going to be doing it this year, you know, these apps, you can record your sessions and upload them on Google Classroom or whatever, you know, whatever type of platform you use. And I think it will still give the child the opportunity to at least get caught up if they missed out. I mean, there's wins and losses with that, because it can, you know, some kids can benefit from it and some kids might struggle because they might, you know, might lack the computer literacy to navigate Google Classroom, even though you might have showed them countless amount of times or whatever. I think it just all depends. But I know they're holding us to a high standard this year. Hopefully we don't have to be in here long. Hopefully we just do it for this first marking period and move on. Yes. But it just all depends. I guess I could say it depends on the student. But I know us, they're holding us 100% accountable to make sure these kids are learning. We got to just adjust to it and just do our best.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, the safety obviously is the most important thing, you know, and I think those are all great points with the technology that's out there. I think especially for high school kids, I'm not so much concerned for them as much as I would be for like younger kids. I think that's where it gets a little more difficult. Now, how are, because you're teaching in Jersey, right?
Yeah.
How are high school sports operating? It was pretty controversial out here. Obviously, you're still well connected in PA. PIAA voted to continue on with sports. Now, specific schools have chosen whether they're going to have fall sports or not, but football in general is being played in Pennsylvania. Are they – is I don't know, you know, the New Jersey board or however that works. So what's the status of high school sports in New Jersey?
And I'm bad with the acronym for – I think it's the NJSSIA or NJSI, one of those.
That's too much.
I know. I forget what it's called, but they are playing out here. Fall sports is a go right now. Certain schools, districts have canceled fall sports, okay. But a majority of the schools around here are still playing. I know my school district is playing. You know, a lot of the neighboring school districts in the county are playing. Everybody right now, for the most part, a lot of people are playing. Now, there's one powerhouse high school, Piscataway High School, where Rutgers is. Mm-hmm. They're a powerhouse. They got a really good, you know, a nice little sports program, especially their football team. Like, Malcolm Jenkins came from there. My teammate from Rutgers, Anthony Davis, who went to the 49ers, he came from there. I mean, they got a lot of Kyle Wilson. There's a lot of guys that came out of there that went to the NFL, you know, college and NFL. Yeah. So, they shut down fall sports. And what we're seeing, you read the start of the newspaper here, the NJ, I get on NJ.com, you know how they have Penn Live and PA. Mm-hmm. A lot of kids from some of these schools that might have shut down are, you know, transferring out. They're going to like a private school or a neighboring school district. So right now, man, fall sports is a go.
Yeah, and I think that is going to be a similar issue in PA. I had read something like the transfer rates are going to go through the roof with certain schools closing and not all of them. I think it's weird though, like that you're still going to have fall sports, but like one of the best teams isn't going to be in it. So like you might win a state championship, but then it's like, okay, well you didn't really play the best teams because some of them closed down. You know what I mean? So it's just like, there's the fairness in it isn't quite there. As far because, you know, some schools played and some schools didn't. So that's interesting. Are you still coaching this year?
I will not be coaching this year. I'm stepping away a little bit to focus on my, just focus on this online platform. But I, matter of fact, tomorrow is my first graduate school course. So I'm starting grad school and it's just, I got to, you know, that's going to take a lot of my time, you know, practicing. That's it. So I'm taking a break from coaching.
So you wouldn't have been coaching either way then?
Okay. Not at all. Yeah. At first I was trying to get a, you know, work something out, but it was just like, as more and more I looked into it, I'm like, it's going to be tough. You know, I want to do really well with this. And this is, you know, this is going to be a long-term, you know, hopefully if everything goes as planned with this program, I do what I'm supposed to do and get, you know, this would be a, you know, a long-term positive for me, you know. I can move up the ladder in education, so I got to take this a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and like coaching's always going to be there. So
we're going to be there.
The masters, obviously.
Good season to take off too.
And then, this is the perfect season to do that, right? Exactly. Yeah. So, and as an educator, and someone who is a former student athlete, it sets an example. Like this comes first. Like the student part comes first. So, bravo to you for taking those steps.
Thank you.
So let's get into some of the topics we had on hand for today. Obviously, the biggest one was the boycotts in the NBA, which were sparked by the Jacob Blake shooting in Kenosha, Wisconsin, who has survived but is likely paralyzed from the waist down for the remainder of his life. And protests then broke out in Kenosha, got pretty bad. A 17-year-old kid with an assault rifle murdered two people and injured another. So things got pretty bad out in Wisconsin. And especially from the Milwaukee Bucks standpoint, guys like George Hill and You know, some others were impacted by it pretty harshly. So, you know, we saw teams sit out. I think it lasted probably, when did it start? Thursday? I think it started Wednesday or Thursday.
Wednesday. Friday.
Games picked back up yesterday and are actually going on today. It's Sunday as we record this. So what were your thoughts? And we actually saw it amongst a lot of other sports as well, but obviously, you know, the NBA was the trendsetter here. What were your thoughts? Do you think they did the right thing? And do you think they got enough out of it?
Okay. Now, I mean, we had this talk, you know, after George Floyd. First and foremost, we definitely have an issue in America. Okay. And you know, before I get, because I go real deep into stuff like this because I'm passionate about it. I said this. I made a post about this because there's been a lot of going back and forth on Facebook. I've seen people's different accounts and people that I know, people that I associate myself with. You know, everybody has that Amendment One. You know, everybody has that, you know, that right to their, you know, right of speech, opinions, what have you. Right. Okay, we all have that. And one thing about me is, no matter what, I was taught to love everybody. You know, I was taught, you know, no matter what your race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, whatever, you know, you respect everybody. You know what I mean? But one thing I also was taught is if something is, you know, bothering you or, you know, you have an issue with something, you speak about it in a politically correct way, you know, in the best way you know how. So I would say this has been long overdue. We need the platform, you know, the sports figures, because especially in urban communities, sports figures are heroes to a lot of people, okay? So when a kid sees LeBron James take a stand like that, you know, for example, they're going to follow and be like, well, if LeBron did it, we're going to do the same thing.
Right.
And let me just go back. And, you know, you guys mind if I talk a little bit, you know, about the issue?
By all means.
So I got to take my glass off. So somebody had told me, I had said something about 401 years of oppression for African Americans in the United States. You know, I'm not going to, you know, a white guy got on it to, you know, on the thread. Actually, it was one of my coaching buddies that made a thread that he made a comment about the things that are going on in the country that needs to be addressed. And I said, yeah, you know, it's been 401 years. And I'm going to explain that 401 years. And I said 401 years of post-traumatic, or I would say 401 years of oppression. I said the black community is suffering from the post-traumatic stress of slavery. And what I mean by that is, you know, I mean in that slavery put a long-term effect on the black community,
yep,
the institution of it. And a man told me, you know, it was a white guy. He comes under and says, slavery is over, bro. Get over it. Okay. So it took all for me to like hold it in.
Right.
All right. But what I mean by the 401 years, slavery has been around since biblical time. You know, it's been around forever. It's a world thing. It's nothing new. 401 years, 1619, the first group of slaves from Africa were brought to what we now know as like Hampton, Virginia. It was called, there was a seminar I went to in Newark called the 1619 Project. So right now it's 2020. It's, you know, that's 401 years of oppression. Now, what I mean by that is that there's a letter that I tell everybody to read because it kind of says as a blueprint of how the Black American, like how Black America was built, I guess you could say, like the Willie Lynch letter. I don't know if you guys ever heard of Willie Lynch letter. Mm. All right. It was written in 1712 by a man named Willie Lynch. He was a slave owner in the West Indies, which is, you know, present day, you know, Jamaica, I believe. Okay. Basically, you know, he had a method that controlled the slave, basically, that made the slave a slave. Because nobody in their right mind is going to want to comply to what's going, you know, to something they're not used to. So when you think about the Africans that were brought across, a lot of them came from royalty, you know. A lot of them were maybe descendants of kings, queens. Some might have been kings, queens, depending on, you know, their status in Africa, as far as like maybe they might have lost a battle or a war, and they're the prisoners of war of that tribe. They might have been stripped of who they were there, and then they were sold into slavery. That's usually how it sometimes went down. So Willie Lynch's method, when he came to America, because America was having trouble, they were having trouble with their slaves. Like, they were like being unruly, unjust, whatever. So he was like, "There's a, I have a blueprint, a map for you to follow that's foolproof." He called it foolproof. And, you know, he said, you know, if you follow my method, you know, anybody, it's simple. An overseer or a servant can apply it to your slave. And the one thing that I take away from it, it said that if you do this correctly, you will be able to control your slave for the next 300 years. Okay? You got to read this. It said you will be able to control your slave for the next 300 years. So we say, okay, that was 1712 when it was written, right?
Right.
What's 300 years?
2020. Or okay. 1712?
Yeah.
You said? Okay.
Yeah, 2020.
Yeah.
So that right there, it was the blueprint. And if you guys read it, man, it's deep, man. It talks about, like, you know, it just basically teaches – the slave to hate himself, basically. You know, black male against black female, old black male against young black male, you know, treat them not to love themselves, but to love master. I mean, it's deep. And when I say post-traumatic stress, the black community, in some way, somehow, has never recovered from slavery, okay? I know people say we need to get reparations, but you can't, there's not enough money in the world that can replace 401 years of repression. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what anybody says about we never got our 40 acres and a mule. What I mean by that is we were 100% stripped of who we were.
Yeah.
For example, and I take pride in who I am. You know what I mean? There's no doubt about it, but I've been doing some research on my family, okay? And my family originated from South Carolina. There's a plantation down in South Carolina, in Sumter, I believe, that was known as the Marlboro Plantation, okay? So when I think about stuff like that, I'm saying every time that I sign my name on a document and I sign, you know, I put my name on something, that Marlboro, mm-hmm. am I really saying, is that really, you know, is that me? that's what I mean by the post-traumatic stress. It could be something like that, and that's big. You just don't know. You know, you don't know who, you know, you don't know where you're really originated from. You got to go back and try to trace it because it's been wiped away.
Right.
So the black community there's a lot of opportunities and things that happen now. Yeah, I'm not saying nothing changed, but it never really, you know, that's still a post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
So that's one. And then, in my opinion, there's not a lot of strong leadership. And what I mean by that is, you got a lot of community activists and community leaders, yes. But in today's modern age, if you study history, you'll see that every time there was a strong leader, they either were killed or they were just, they were, you know, constantly picked on, or like, you know, what was the FBI, you know, people penetrating their system, brought right. them to a close. So, you know, you use Martin Luther King, for example, strong leader. To gain the mass of people, unite them for a different cause. Malcolm X, same thing. He was killed by his own people, the Nation of Islam. However, you still have people who was in there, in that organization, who was tipping them off what was going on. You know, I think if you ever watched the one documentary, one of his security guards was an FBI agent, okay? He didn't know that, but that guy was. Mm-hmm. And then the one people I like to use as example, Black Panthers. There's a movie coming out called I think it's called Judas and the Black Messiah. That's about Fred Hampton. Fred Hampton was probably the next big time leader. I mean, he was next. He was 21 years old, but he functioned and moved like somebody that, you know, like an OG. That's what you call him, an OG. He was able to get the young people on board in Chicago, and then his message was going to spread across the country. You know, he was the next big thing. FBI assassinated him. So you think about it, man, when you have a strong leadership in that community, when you have somebody that can speak up for your people and that can really put things into action, there's always something that's going to try to bring it down, okay? So we fast forward to what's going on now, and I just think the leadership – now, yeah, you have people like Al Sharpton and all these people coming – you know, they did the march in D.C., you know, and my thing is, where is that going to take us? You know, because we just – they just had a protest in March a couple months ago, and it's still the same thing happening, okay? Our youth – and it, and you guys, I'm glad we talk about sports, because in our urban communities, a big thing that's a measure of success is through entertainment and sports. You know, it all comes in, it all comes together. Okay. What I mean by that is, you know, we were always, you know, being a person of color, I feel, you know, our value is more so gravitated towards, you know, like how the world views us as athletes and entertainers. You know, we don't get credit. A lot of credit for the academic and the, you know, maybe the political, what have you, accomplishments. It's more so sports. So in our neighborhoods, and we're coming up, you know, I remember I talked about this last time, being an athlete, everybody expects you to go to NFL or NBA or whatever, and everybody's counting on you to make it. Right. You know, and you're telling the kid, you're telling your kids, be just like him. You know, look how hard he works. He's going to go to the league. But then when you don't make it, it's like, well, oh, he didn't make it. So he's not really – you know, he might not be a value to the community or what have you. Right. All right. So we're programmed to think that that's our outlets. And I know I'm kind of going off the thing, but it's like we're programmed to think it's sports or entertainment. That's it. I can't do nothing else. Okay. And I'm losing my train of thought here. Sports and entertainment. So when you look at what's going on now, oh, I'm sorry. I have another example of that. If you ever watch a kid from Coney Island about Stephon Marbury, when he asked that little boy in the barbershop, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he says, I want to be a professional basketball player. He said, oh, that's nice. Stephon Marbury tells his little kid's like 7 years old. He's young. And he tells him, do you know that you could be the president of the United States? And it got quiet. And the kid couldn't answer. He said, I never heard that before. And Stephon Marbury, you can see him start to choke up. Yeah. He's just like, dang, that's what's going on in our community. You know, they're being told, that's it. Like, especially in Brooklyn, where he's from, you know, that's it. That's the outlet. So just where this is coming together is now you see these sports figures that's making all this money. They're doing all these great things on the court, okay, on the field. And our kids look up to him, and they want to say, I want to be just like him based off of what they're doing on the court. You know, what we used to say back in the day, we should have fade away, Kobe. You know, RIP Kobe, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But now, from what I'm seeing now, athletes are really starting to take a stand. It started with Kaepernick.
Yeah.
And only a handful follow him. A lot of people thought he was crazy for doing what he was doing, but it started with Kaepernick. And now it went from Kaepernick, Kyrie Irving said, I'm not coming back to play. Right now, our cause is greater than basketball.
Yeah.
Okay. And now here we go. We're back to square one. Another man in Wisconsin, regardless of what his criminal record was, regardless of what the alleged things against him, this man was shot 7 times in his back in front of his kids. Okay. We need somebody, the community needs somebody to lean on to spread the message, okay? And this is what Kaepernick was trying to say, Kyrie was trying to say. So now the athletes are saying, you know what? Milwaukee started off, because that's right in their backyard. This got to change, okay? And you're starting to see a lot more people get involved in the movement. You know, and this is before, you know, even with George Floyd, you know, they changed the Black Lives Matter. You know, is it enough? It's a tough question to ask, because you applaud them for doing it. It's great. It was great to see, but you know, as you can see, they're back to playing.
Right.
It's like a gray area, because it's like, what's the benefit of it? If we boycott basketball and give nothing to watch, okay, then what's your next step? Are you going to take the streets and start marching and protesting, or are you going to stop playing basketball and just sit back and let another, you know, let something else happen? Right. You know, I guess the biggest message around all this is voting, correct? Is that, that's what they're talking about now.
That was essentially the main takeaway that came from it. Like every NBA arena is going to be turned into a polling place. They created these social justice coalitions, and the other thing was advertising spots in each game, which they were already doing, but I guess they just wanted it intensified. But yeah, those were the three things that came out of the boycott.
Yeah, I mean, and it's that's great. But here's another thing I've seen is 20% of the NBA is registered to vote.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. That's incredibly low.
Wow.
For a predominantly black league. It's extremely low.
And we all know, I mean, fellas, I'm not against, you know, politics is politics. You're not going to get every promise fulfilled. Everything that they say they're going to do, they don't do, you know, because one, you might not have the support. It's always going to be a heated rivalry between Republican and Democrats in that Senate. So whoever has a great idea, it might get turned down. You know, that's just the reality of what's going on. So we know we're not going to, you can't really, how can I say this? You can't really rely, you know, on some of the hopes that the government, that they're going to say they're going to do for you, because it's not going to happen. Like, I say never, but student loans, come on, you think everybody's going to get wiped out? If it does, you know, you know what I mean?
Like, I'm hoping so. That's picking up some steam. It ain't going to happen in the next 4 years, I don't think.
I don't know that Biden's progressive enough
for that, but.
Especially for graduate school, I take it. You know, I would like to see that happen. But I mean, I'm just saying, you know, we can't rely on everything. But I know for sure, I know people personally who didn't vote and are complaining about what's going on right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got to vote. All right. If you have that amendment right, 15th Amendment right. All men, women, you know, well, women's didn't come till the 19th, but everybody has the right to vote. Boom, you got it. You know, I mean, as long as you're a U.S. citizen and you're 18 years of age, what have you, and you don't have a criminal record, you know what I mean? All that. But it's just, I just think that in our communities, you know, and it's all ties into each other, you know. Our kids have been programmed, especially in the urban community, they've been programmed that they can only succeed in two avenues. We just need to have that more exposure now. You're seeing NBA players get up there on a social platform and talk, you know, and you're seeing a lot, you know, whoa, these guys are actually educated. You know, these guys actually can speak, you know, and they can motivate, you know, and they're showing, you know, LeBron. I always use LeBron for an example because, like, he's taking everything, you know, he's taking his money and putting it right into his community. I think that's big too. You know, a lot of these urban areas don't have the resources to give those kids no opportunities. And, you know, sometimes when people make it out, you know, they might do a camp or what have you, but sometimes that's not enough. Sometimes you might actually need somebody to come in and build a community center that has, you know, the resources for people in the urban community, you know, to benefit from. You know, LeBron has that I Promise school where, you know, every kid from that school when they graduate has a free ride to Akron. You know what I'm saying? That's big because now you're educating the masses, you're getting the people the opportunities. You know, they're going to come out with jobs. If they follow through with everything and follow the blueprint, they're going to be set, you know. And I think athletes, I mean, you got to take care of your family. I get it. You got to take care, you know, there's things that you want to do because you worked hard to get there. But I think that's some of the things that's missing and I think could help with some of the issues that we're facing in these urban communities, you know, with the crime and things of that sort. If you give people opportunity, and you have more stuff for people to do, the less you're going to have with the crime and the, you know, the issues going on. Say, like, we talk about the police, and I you know, I have family members who were police officers. You know, I have family members who were in the federal government, you know. So not all the police are bad. We get that. You know, there's a few bad apples, as we can see, who just don't have a respect for protocol, if they're supposed to follow, what have you, you know. But, you know, even our urban communities, if, you know, you have those resources, and, you know, boy, people have to turn to crime and things of that sort, then you're not going to have to worry about the police as much, you know. So I just think we need our athletes on a whole general level to step up more. You know, like Michael Jordan, I think he gave $100 million. I forget how much he gave to the Black Lives Matter movement. But we need a little bit more, Mike. You know what I'm saying? I just bought a pair. And I'm not a Jordan person, but I just bought a pair of Jordan 1s because they go good with my I got a tattoo that goes good with it goes good with the shoes. You know, and you know, but you know, the people that are buying your clothing and sneakers are people who look just like you. And they come from areas that might that's you know, if you look good, it takes precedence over your education. It takes precedence over your health. You're worried about being fly and flashy, you know what I mean? The drip, you know. Well, that's what we gotta start putting the more of the investment in and the education in, you know. So that we can have, you know, when you stand on the platform like BLM, like Black Lives Matter, you got to know what you're talking about, you know? Right. And I just think that this country is just suffering from, you know, the institution of slavery, the overall, just the social economic, I mean, the effect it has on the people. And it's just, I think, you know, with the president and how he comes across and the things that he preaches, like, man, he doesn't even acknowledge these people. Like, when they say their name, like, he gets up here, he talks about everything that's going on. The protesters, you know, are, you know, being unlawful and, you know, he's just talking crazy, but he doesn't even acknowledge why they're doing it. Like, he doesn't say, I'm with the families of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and, Ahmaud Arbery Mr. Blake here, you know, he just gets up there and he just beats around the bush. Well, our federal police is doing a really nice job of handling what's going on in Portland or Chicago. And it's like, look, man, you're showing the world that you don't care about the issue that's occurring in our country. And people feel like they have the right to do certain things because you preach it in your, like, you hear his speeches. I'm the law and order candidate. You know, he told the police, you know, they're being too soft on their arrest protocol. You know, so you need to wrap it up a bit. You need to rev it up a bit. And some police officers take that stuff to the extreme. And as you can see, they use that privilege. And there it goes. You know, and we've seen it. It's been a lot. It's been a lot of white cops. But also, you see it with black cops as well. You see it. You know, I hate to say it like that. Obviously, most recently, there's been a lot of, you know, white officers shooting black. But also, like Freddie Gray, it was a mixture of it was black and white that was inflicting pain. And it's just like, you know, they need to do something with the police. We need to do something with the gun laws because you can't tell me that a 17-year-old kid can come from another state. Matter of fact, from what I read, his mama brought him to protect the town. You ain't even from Wisconsin, bro. From Illinois. You come up with an AR-15 to protect the town. And then you kill two people, injure one, and you're able to walk past the police with nobody stopping you. And just saying, you know, basically he's like, all right, you know, I shot three people down there, you know, for self-defense. Right. So I just, you know, I'm all over the place with this because it's a very emotional topic to talk about. You know, but I just think there's so much that could be done. Maybe they might need to boycott sports. You know, if sometimes you see something, like I said, if you take, you know, if you just say, if NBA's players say, the hell with this, we're done, you know, now we're going to go back and take it to the streets. We're going to organize protests. We're going to march with the community. NFL players, same thing. You know, you take some of these star players, we're done. We're not playing. Right. We're going to go see what's going on. We're going to see what our community needs. Maybe that might wake up the country. But I know also money is power. You know, teams could say, you're not going to get paid if you boycott. You know, and some guys can't. Some guys can't afford. It's pretty put like this. How much are you willing to sell out for your people? That's how it comes down to. Because you look at Colin Kaepernick, you know, before they kind of shut him up, well, they did shut him up by paying him. He was willing to do whatever by all means necessary to get his point across.
Right.
And it involved losing money. Now Nike ended up giving him a nice little contract for that, and they, you know, they used it as a platform. You know, they sold a jersey and some sneakers and whatnot, but it's how much it's with these athletes is how far are you willing to go. I think Jalen Brown said it. He said, if you go home, go home. But don't go home with your sit there. You know, right. if you're talking that you're going to do this, then you need to be out there in the community in which you serve, you know. So, you know, it's a tough topic to talk about.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm just blabbing on, so y'all can just, you know, whenever you guys.
But I mean, I
just think, yeah.
It's, yeah. As far as the boycotts go, I thought they were a nice gesture. Yeah. I thought the NBA clearly got some good things out of it. The issue is that, like I think Doc Rivers put it best, it's not the NBA's job to fix the world. But it is their job to be a part of it, right? And this was their way of being a part of it. And I think most of the boycott came from their frustration of feeling so powerless. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. These are guys who have reached the top of their craft, multimillionaires, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. And they're still watching their people die. And it's just like, dang, man, like I'm out here playing a game for millions of dollars and people who don't have that privilege are still dying. And it, you know, at the end of the day, like, yeah, that's true. But unfortunately, with the money that you have, you still don't quite have the power that is needed to make the changes, right?
Yeah.
You know, we could stop every sports league and completely boycott them forever until it doesn't necessarily mean that changes are going to happen, right? Because how many of the people who truly need the changes in their hearts, right? Mm-hmm. You're talking about regular people who still don't get it. Those people stopped watching sports already, especially the NBA, so they didn't care about this boycott. This didn't change their hearts in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So that wasn't going to, you know, a boycott wasn't going to solve that issue.
Yeah.
Really what it comes down to, and the biggest impact that the NBA has is voting and educating as many people as possible on the importance in that. And I get it, especially amongst Black people. So many Black people have given up on the system because it has not worked for us. I get it. I just had a discussion with a college friend of mine, and this is something that we talked about. He doesn't vote. He's adamant about it. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, one, that's your right. You can exercise that. But don't discourage other people not to, for one. That's their legal right under the Constitution, is to use their right to vote. But the thing is, and ultimately, it matters. Voting matters. And it's not just picking between Biden or Trump. Like, those guys neither of them will eradicate systemic racism. I'm here to tell you that now. Neither of those guys within the next 4 years, whoever gets elected, is not going to. Now, Joe Biden's going to try a little bit harder than Trump is, right? Mm-hmm. And from a federal level. But what really matters is the local elections that happen, right? And your Congress and Senate, those are the people that pass laws and legislation. Guess who your police commissioner is selected by? In a lot of most places, it's your mayor. How many people even know their mayor? I can't tell you the mayor of York's name. I can't.
Michael Helfrich.
Something like that. I think I saw his name in the news when all these protests sparked out, but I cannot tell you his name off the top of my head. I voted in 2016. I don't know that I voted for him because I didn't pay attention. Yep. Right. So that's something for me personally, that's become an agenda that I've taken amongst myself, is becoming much more educated on mayoral elections and things like that. Because and also a lot of these elections happen every 2 years instead of four. We had the issue with Central.
Really, every year there's
elections. Pretty much every year, depending on where you live, there's an important election that happens. Even school board, pretty much happens. Muldrow, you're probably familiar out here, and in the school district that I now live in, Central York had some racist comments that came out of a YouTube
board member.
Yeah, a board member. You know, their meeting was broadcasted on YouTube. People were highly upset in the Central community. Well, that person was just elected last year. The two ladies that were making the comments were literally just elected last year. It's an all-white school board. So even the people who don't agree with her, none of those people are in a position to check her. They're not educated enough on this topic for the most part, especially a heavy Republican school board, all white school board, is not going to check her comments. She has no one there even refuting what she's saying. This is the issue. These are the people that decide your children's education, their fate, essentially, right? And we're not voting for, we're not even participating in these elections. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's where it starts. You know, when you vote for the mayor, and your mayor, the person you're voting for needs to be on the page of understanding that police brutality is an issue so that he appoints a police commissioner, sheriff, et cetera,
yeah,
who is willing to take the steps to fix that issue. So that's how you solve police brutality. Then you want to talk about defunding the police. And for those who are unfamiliar, defunding the police doesn't mean abolishing it where there's no police departments, mm-hmm. However, that is a movement that some people feel. I'm still in the defund place, and that's mostly the one that's picking up steam. What that means is reallocating funds, right? Mm-hmm. You're taking funds from the police department and you're allocating them into the communities. Well, the reason for that is because poverty is directly related to crime. And I call them what they are, they're racist, people who love to bring up black on black crime in times like this, to say Black Lives Matter doesn't care about black lives and black on black crime. Well, one, it's just not true. And two, the black on black crime is not necessarily related to just black people killing other black people. It's right. Because they are disenfranchised people who are below the poverty line. They're doing these things or, you know, involved in drugs and gangs and things like that because that's where they feel is their only outlet, right? That's what you have forced them into by subjecting them to a lifetime of poverty. So that is what contributes to black on black crime, not just black people don't just shoot black people because they're black. And it's also proximity, right? 85% of white people that are murdered by other white people. So white on white crime essentially is a thing then, right? Well, you never hear that term, but it's proximity and poverty that relates to crime, murder, things like that. So if you take funds from these police departments or in other places and you reinvest back into black communities, guess what goes down? Crime rates. Guess what happens when crime rates go down? You don't need as much police. When crime rates go down, police don't come out, they don't kill you. Wow. Interesting how that works, right? So and how does that happen? Getting people into Congress, getting people in the Senate to pass legislation, they're the ones who determine where the funding goes. That's what's important. Joe Biden can, you know, say everything that he needs to. He doesn't have control over that, right? He wants to, he doesn't even want to defund the police, mind you. But ultimately, on a local level, he doesn't have control over that for the most part. On a federal level, he does. But on a local level, he does not have control over that. That's where voting matters. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the biggest thing that came out of the NBA's boycott was that, in getting people, you know, these voting polling stations, because that's another form of oppression, is voter suppression, right? I know some states down south had certain polling places go, and then they got to drive an hour or two, you know what I mean, to go vote.
Yep.
It will help with that, especially when a lot of these arenas are in, right, the city, so they're going to be closer to people, you know what I mean, to majority of people. So I thought that was important. We'll see what comes out of these coalitions. I'm not a big, I wouldn't say fan, but like the NFL has one, a players coalition as well. Not much, in my opinion, has come out of that. So I don't have much faith. But I think if you're talking about the advertising, which was the third thing that came out of the boycott, the advertising needs to be directed towards educating people on the power of voting, not just presidential. The discussion that we're having right here, right now, is what more black people need to be educated on, because they don't understand that this is where, you know, these things come from. So you got to get young progressives into local government, or, you know, progressive candidates into local government who actually have ideas and solutions. But if you're sitting out elections, it's pretty much proven when black people sit out of elections, Republicans win. It's as simple as that. We have the power to determine elections with our votes. When we sit out or we don't show up in large numbers, a lot of times Republicans end up winning. So that's where the change needs to happen. And, you know, hopefully the NBA boycott will bring a lot more light to that. You know, but ultimately at the end of the day, it's not on the NBA to even carry this movement. It's on us three. It's on regular people. It's on your Facebook friends. It's on the people listening to this podcast right now. It's our job to carry this movement. How much more powerful would a nationwide boycott be of work, right? If everybody, you know, who goes to a regular job boycotted going to work, the economy would collapse. That's where major impactful changes. The NBA has a very small impact on the economy. So does the NFL. So do these other, like, sure, they generate a lot of money, but ultimately a nationwide boycott would be something more powerful and impactful than what an NBA boycott would be. So sure, they can set the trend, but if other people don't follow, which, you know, maybe the NFL will, I don't know that they need to now, because the NBA is back to playing and most sports will go back to playing by the time they start. They probably won't, but it's about, a lot of times it's about the message that you're sending with it.
Yeah, I think that's where the NBA players do have an opportunity, is with these local elections. Like when they talk about putting pressure on the owners, like, right, because we do talk about this national stuff and we talk about Trump and we say, you know, if you support Trump, well, like, Trump isn't responsible for mass incarceration and he's not responsible for these terrible police policies. And, you know, federal government typically don't really have a big impact on that. Joe Biden, like Eli said and Richard said, you're not going to have a huge impact on that. But what does matter is messaging. And right, Donald Trump's message is he refuses to even condemn the cops who commit these murders. Like, that matters. Like, and it might not matter to people on Twitter who are, you know, already woke or whatever you want to call it. But like, to the average person, the president's, even if you are a Republican, you are a moderate Democrat, mm-hmm, and you're just an average person, like, the president of the United States, their messaging matters. Like, that is an important thing in this too. And that's why I think people should get behind Joe Biden. But the local elections is where you're going to see the changes in the defunding of the police, like Eli talks about. But that's where the NBA owners have a lot of pull, right? Like, these guys are very rich in their areas. They have a lot of sway in their regions. Like, even Milwaukee's owner. And Milwaukee, you know, this is, it's kind of, you know, not, you know, it's kind of, it's ironic almost that this is where this murder, or not murder, this attempted murder happened. And they're the team that spoke out about this, because you already had Sterling Brown on the team, who was a victim himself of police brutality. And they're the team to come out and do this. You know, this isn't the first time NBA players have had a boycott. The Celtics in 1961 boycotted a game in St. Louis because Bill Russell, some of their teammates were denied service in Kentucky. So they boycotted in St. Louis. And this is what we see NBA players do. They lead the way on these issues a lot of the time. And we can talk about how maybe that's not what we want, but that's just the situation we're in. There's a lot of levels to this, though. I think there's short-term effects of this boycott. There's long-term effects. The short-term, probably the biggest one is, you know, the narrative around this was kind of dying down. Even if you just watched the news or whatever, but, like, if you watched the games, like, yes, they were asking questions a lot of the time, but, like, even when the games first started, we were seeing every national anthem because we were seeing every player on a knee.
Yep.
They really stopped showing those, actually. Like, in the past few weeks here, like, they weren't even showing the national anthem anymore. Like, it had certainly died down to a degree, the attention on the social injustice and what it was meant to be when the players first showed up. So I think the players taking a step back and saying, this isn't working to the extent we want it to. And not only does it force, you know, these games to now refocus on it to a higher degree, but it also, what it does is Wednesday night, Thursday night on your local news channel or whatever channel you're watching, instead of normal stuff where they wouldn't talk about NBA at all, they're saying, like, NBA players are boycotting playing. So, like, It's like, that's the thing where people are like, well, like the NBA's audience, their mind is already made up. Like the people that are watching the NBA, like they don't care. Well, like it's not only them now, because now they've invoked this boycott. Now every news channel is saying NBA players are boycotting. So even if I'm not someone who watches the NBA, see, I hate the NBA already, just, you know, not even because of the Black Lives Matter. Maybe that's a part of it. Maybe I just don't really like basketball, but I'm just watching the news on a whatever Wednesday night, Thursday night, and they say, you know, players boycott. Well, and then they say because of Jacob Blake shooting. Well, maybe I don't have Twitter. Maybe I didn't see the video. I go watch the video now, and I'm thinking, holy shit, what is going on? Okay, maybe these guys have a point. Maybe something's going on here, and I need to start paying attention. So that is an actual short-term, immediate impact that I think means something. The long-term stuff is kind of what we're talking about with the voting, the owners. Now, I think that it's tough for them to say, for those players to say, we're going to sit out the rest of the playoffs, especially because, you know, that decision, as we talked about this before, Eli, on previous episodes, that decision affects salary cap long-term, which affects everybody in the league, not just the players who would be deciding to sit. I'm sure they might be on board with that, maybe, but you kind of can't really make the decision for everyone else. So you kind of, you're kind of forced to at some point, unless you could get everybody in agreement in the NBAPA, you're kind of forced to go back eventually. But I think the boycott definitely served a purpose, and certainly was on board with what the players decided. And if they wouldn't have, boycotted, I'd be, you know, supporting them as well. Agreed. And you know, that's just part of the position they're in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's a strong point, Mike, that I will admit I didn't consider, you know, is that the news of the boycott reaches a broader audience. Plus then, you know, all the details about it, you know, if you follow Shams or Waj, they were going into all the details of the behind the scenes of the negotiations and stuff like that. So that was all, that's a solid point. So, you know, I'm glad they did it. Hindsight being 2020, I'm glad they did it. We wouldn't be sitting here talking about it right now if it didn't serve a purpose. Mm-hmm. So, it makes sense, man. It's important to keep the conversation going. At the end of the day, never let anyone, you know, forget that Black Lives Matter. Because this is bound to happen again. It's going to happen again when we will, you know, have the same things happen. But again, man, these upcoming elections are much more than just presidential. While that's obviously important, these local elections and things like that are important as well. So I hope that message of this podcast and this boycott from the NBA comes across clearer than anything else you might have heard. So I think that's probably a good place to wrap up. Muldrow, any additional comments, thoughts that you wanted to leave the listeners with today?
No, I think you guys, I always love coming on here and just talking to you, both of you guys, man, because it's just so real, down to earth, and, you know, comfortable. You know, it's like we're sitting at Starbucks having a cup of coffee and just talking issues. So I love it.
Yeah. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you. All that I would say is, I know you mentioned like Central York and all that. I think one thing that does need to change, coming from a teacher perspective, is maybe, you know, to keep America aware. I think, because we have to learn, you got to learn history no matter what. I think there needs to be a strong, you know, we call it culturally, I forget what it's called, but you know, it's been long for me that, you know, I'm just going through all this stuff, doing things, running around. But we need to have, you know, keep everybody aware of what's the times, you know. I think school districts need to have, you know, now I know some of the hard things is also, you know, you got to look at the demographic of places, but, you know, you need to require teachers, especially in social studies, to teach more about Black history. I know certain people's probably coming up, you know, depending on where you're at, your classes were, you know, Black History Month. All right, here we go. Slavery was bad. Lincoln paid the slave. Excuse me. Right. Slavery was bad. Harriet Tubman was a conductor of Underground Railroad. Lincoln freed the slaves. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech was, you know, the aha moment for the civil rights.
Right.
Obama elected president. Right. Okay. It's kind of more so focused on the positives. Sometimes, sometimes a lot of things happen out of just pure ignorance. People don't know what's, you know, people don't know. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised, even in Black communities, you know, unless you're getting it from home, you know, certain schools, kids don't know their history, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's important. That's what I'm saying. When you say something as strong as Black Lives Matter, sometimes, you know, you get up there, you got to know what you're talking about.
Right.
You got to know what you're protesting for. You know, you got to know who came before you. And I think that, especially Central York, man, that was amazing to see where you have a high population of African Americans. To hear somebody talk like, I would probably pull my kid out of there after hearing that.
You're
not going to that
school. Yeah. Well, the 1619 project that you talked about, I think is going to be really important. I know a little bit about that. It kind of is an American history teaching centered around slavery and the impact. And, you know, it kind of shades away from the traditional American exceptionalism, which is just, you know, forced to us. And I think that's what Trump kind of prescribes to, which is why he won't criticize anything like that. American exceptionalism, it really challenges that. And until you're able to challenge that, you're just not going to be able to you know, be up to speed on these social issues.
And I think, Eli, what you were saying with the community, just having the resources, I'm a little bit nodding, but that's what I was saying earlier, you know. If there's no, like you said, defunding the police and everything, you gotta, and especially in urban communities, man, you gotta have the resources, period. You know, you look at all these cities, Detroit, Baltimore, you know what I mean, Philly, you know, especially I like using Detroit, because Detroit had, at one point, it was an industrial boom town. You had all the Ford, General Motors, you know, then you had Motown. You had so much stuff. You had opportunity. When that stuff gets outsourced and you take that stuff out, all right, now what next? Okay. Yeah. And Detroit and all these places had some issues too with the riots during the civil rights movement. Like I said, no leadership. You know, you take your leader away, people have nobody to lean on to. Chaos usually follows up with that. So with a mixture of that, outsourcing because of the lack of leadership and everything that was going on. And now you leave pretty much a city as a black hole. And that's what we're seeing in urban communities across the country. Now, one thing you are seeing is now what we used to call white flight, where whites were flocking to the suburbs. Now what they're doing is they're doing something called gentrification, where they're taking the property value and increasing it, moving you out, giving you a certain amount of money, moving you out, and they're rebuilding everything, and they're coming back in. Like North Philly, I keep hearing about Temple.
My grandma's whole neighborhood.
Yeah.
Bruh. There was a little park down the street from my grandma's house.
Right.
That me and my cousins, whenever we used to go visit in Philly, she's from Northwest Philly, Roxborough area.
Right
down the street. Broken down, busted down park. Yeah. BS looking park, right? Look, that's not worth anything. But we used to go there and hoop when I used to go stay in Philly for summers with my cousins. Yeah. And that entire street, for as long as I knew, was beat down. And now you go to that same street, there are 500K plus valued houses throughout it all, except for my grandmother's house. The only one that she owns and will not sell. They have gentrified the entire neighborhood, took the whole park down. It's not even there anymore. They're these condos, which are like 500K plus in worth. That take up the entire area now, and it's all her neighbors went from all black to all white.
Yeah, and you can't afford to live there. And then what happens is these kids, like the people that come from there, they're getting pushed out farther and farther. So now they go to the suburbs, and here's where it's like a revolving circle. It's like a 360. Then you go to the suburbs, and they don't have the resources for these people who are coming out there. So they might bring a different culture and everything. Then they go to school, they experience racism. They experience the lack of education because, you know, they're already profiled as a city kid. Unless they're good at sports. If you're good at sports, you're good. You're going to get in there, you're going to ball out, you're going to do, you know, what have you done for me. But if you're just a regular kid coming in from North Philly and they push you out, you don't have the resources, they don't hire the teachers to accompany and, you know, accommodate, then you're swimming up. That's what's going on. And, you know, it's just crazy, man. It's a revolving door of what's going on right now. And I just think, you know, we got to keep pushing. We got to keep addressing things like this. And I know me, I want to get more involved I know up here, you know.
Yeah, same.
Especially when this COVID stuff ends. I mean, it's starting to get a little bit more loose, but I definitely want to get more involved with some of the organizations around here in my community where I'm at in the South Ward in North. Me and my fiance, we're talking about the, getting back involved with the NAACP, you know, really like put our actions, you know, we've been talking about it. Now we really got to do it. You know, we really got to start stepping up to the plate and doing it, you know, just sitting back here talking to ours. Now we want to really start doing things, you know? So I just, one thing I hope, gentlemen, is that we don't have another outbreak.
Yeah. So yeah,
but that's it.
Yeah, and in regards to Central, I can tell you right now, I'm already taking them steps because the little one back here who is walking around is not going to be subjected to an education from people like that. Yeah. So I got something in the works, working with some people on fixing that, at least to whatever I can control about it. It's important. Get involved, get active in your communities, people. The other thing, before we sign off, is I don't think people quite understand the economic impact that post-slavery, Jim Crow, stuff like that still has on the Black community. I'm gonna put a link in the description of our video today of another YouTube video that explains it and breaks it down. Because slavery might be over, bro, but Jim Crow's impact on the Black community never ended. And we went 200 plus years of uncompensated work. So you can't sit here and act like that 200 years after slavery ended almost, that doesn't still have an impact on Black communities of all the lost wages that we didn't get during that time. Yes, that still matters. We didn't get a chance to create generational wealth off of the labor that you took from us. So, these kind of things are important, man. I'm glad the NBA brought light to this issue and magnified it again, for us. So I think that's a good place for us to stop. For those tuning in, again, this episode is brought to you by the All In Network. Make sure you check out our website, allinnetwork.net, where you can find the audio versions and video versions of our other podcasts, which is All In Politics, Real Deal Radio, the Rain and Bliss podcast, and the newest Beast Gaming podcast. You can find their latest videos and all of their audio there. That link will also be in the description of this video. So check that out. And even the articles on our blog will be available for you guys there.
Yep.
Mike, any words before we sign off?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys, Richard. We definitely appreciate you coming on, man. We're hoping that you can, we want you to be a little more regular on here. We love having you. We love your insights. So we really appreciate you, man.
Just let me know when you need me. I'll be following on Twitter and I'll be liking and reposting. Boy, yeah. I'll tell you what, Mike, you can tweet, see my label, you can tweet your ass off, man. I said, I can't keep up with Mike, man.
Always got something to say, man.
Yeah, but thank you guys for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. Yep. Follow us on Twitter @all_in_pod, Instagram @allinnetwork, Facebook @allinmedianetwork. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode, and we will see you guys again on Thursday.
Hey guys, it's Mike from the All In Podcast. Just wanted to remind you about our merchandise store, teespring.com/all-in-network. Head on over there and use the promo code ALLINPOD and get 15% off. Support the network. We've got all kinds of t-shirts, hoodies, blankets, phone cases, coffee mugs, really whatever you can get, and support the network. We would appreciate it. Go to teespring.com/all-in-network and use the promo code ALLINPOD to get 15% off. Thanks, guys.